Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Welcome to Down to Earth with Harriet Kamak. It's Wednesday morning. I almost struggled to say that because for some reason I'm thinking it's Tuesday because yesterday was Tuesday and the day before was Monday. So I'm off a little bit, just like you are. You're off too. We missed it by a couple of days, right? Right. So I wanted to just say good morning, and good morning, and welcome to Down to Earth with Harriet Kamak. It's our new season. We started our new season a couple of days ago, and our thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Welcome to Down to Earth with Harriet Kamak. It's such a pleasure to be here as we stream across a plethora of media. Just thank you. We stream across the universe to bring good news and to talk about the issues that matter. Thank you to all our listeners everywhere, whatever network you're listening to us on. I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out to be with us. On our show yesterday, we talked with April, who is the mother of a missing child, and she uncovered some interesting stories about her own battle and her own journey to bring her daughter home. We learned that April is a survivor of cancer. She's in fact undergoing cancer treatments right now, and that her daughter is still missing after 2 months, and that originally when she reported it to the police department, they didn't deem it serious. And I don't know about you, but I don't know in what universe a child missing is not a serious matter. The trafficker who took the child apparently had the child in her own handwriting. It seemed like a struggle had taken place, and in her own handwriting had the child write a note saying that she was okay. All of these points to me that this is indicative of trafficking. So I'm asking your support. So go to the Facebook page for Ameria Hall and leave a message. Just leave a message of encouragement as this entire family is contracting and experiencing loss. And this just highlights the number of missing women and children throughout the country. Somewhere, somehow, somebody has a missing relative. So we just wanted to make sure that for those who are in the fight, they stay in the fight as we try to figure out how to bring these children home. And then as we continue our focus on violence leading up to October, when we focus on intimate partner violence, but now we're focusing on just violence is prevalent in our community. Violence is prevalent in our society. You would admit that. I mean, we've seen more mass shootings in the last 3 months, more than we're comfortable with. And I'm not suggesting by any stretch or in a scope of the imagination that mass shootings are ever comfortable. And no, that's not the issue. What I'm saying is that there have been so many mass shootings that we're becoming overly sensitized. You know, we're suffering from dissociative trauma. So I wanted tomorrow on our show, we're going to talk about women in prison, and I'll have a guest on. And she was falsely accused. I mean, you've seen the stories recently of someone who, three men in Philadelphia who have been exonerated by the DA because they actually went back and looked at the cases. And in looking at the cases, even without DNA evidence, they could look at the case and see that these people had nothing to do with the crimes that they were accused of and had sat in jail for some one guy for as much as 34 years for something he did not do. That is unjust. Nobody should spend time in jail for something they didn't do. Come on now. And so we're going to talk with my guest tomorrow, has a similar experience where she was jailed for something she didn't do. So she's going to tell her story of how that happened and what has happened since she has emerged from jail, how it interrupted her life. She can't even get a loan to go to college in the regulations and the laws that take place today. So that's one. The next day, we're going to talk with someone whose son, interracial marriage, interracial dating, was just dating. He's black. He was dating a white girl, some remote part of Michigan. And he turned up dead. Just turned up dead, and the police or nobody can give an answer as to what happened to this young man. So we're going to talk about that. And then next week, we're going to have a guest on who's going to talk about the gun violence that's taking place in Detroit. We're going to talk about why there are so many guns on the streets in Detroit. What is happening? Is this gang warfare? Is this territory? Is this gang warfare about drugs? Is this gang warfare about who owns the commerce that takes place on that corner, whether the commerce is prostitution, whether it's drugs? We're going to have a conversation. So we're waiting for our guest to confirm their availability, right? So these are the issues that matter. In today's world, what we're finding is that violence has become an intersection in our lives. We didn't want it to, none of us wanted to. In fact, I'm probably gonna lose some of you as my viewers because you don't wanna hear this, because you're like, that's not my story, because you probably live in a space and in a place where violence is not your issue, where you don't, it's not relevant to you because you don't find it your story. But for most of us in the country, this has become a pivotal point. We're at the stage now where we are seeing violence in epic proportions. I mean, people just feel like they can walk around with a gun like we're in the Wild Wild West or something. And who says that I don't believe you should have a gun? I believe you should have a gun. I just don't believe that you have the right to take that gun out and shoot into innocent people. And that's where you and I agree. And I know you agree with that because you're like, who does that, right? You just want a gun because it's part of your manhood. It's part of how you grew up. It's part of how the male members of your family express their manhood. And I agree with you on that. I mean, there's nothing totally wrong with that. I don't believe in feminizing men, or that you have to emasculate men and feminize men to get what you want, to live in a violence-free society. I don't believe that. I believe there's a consciousness, because the men who are shooting people are crazy and stupid. Most men are not. So I don't believe that we need to be to emasculate men and feminize men in order for them to not be violent. I don't believe that. But what I believe should happen is an honest conversation about the need for carrying guns in public spaces. Why do we need to have guns in public spaces? Why do we feel the need to display our guns? What power do you arrive at or feel when you're walking around in Walmart or Target or out in the public with a gun strapped to your hip? I just want to know, what does that tap into? And I know most of you guys out there are shaking your heads like, I don't need that to feel powerful. I'm a man, I'm empowered, blah, blah, blah. And as women, I feel good about that. But there is a point at which it is no longer safe. And I'm so glad that Walmart and Kroger, have you guys noticed, have stepped into the foray and are asking their customers, please do not walk around with your guns. Because pretty soon, you know what's going to happen? Those businesses are going to close, because most of us are going to say, you know what, I'll just order online and pick it up, right? I'll just drive to your pickup and pick it up, which means it's a decrease in business, because the more people come in the store, right, and they eyeball stuff, is the more they react to impulse buying, as opposed to if they're just online, they're just cut and dried. I just want meat, potatoes, pasta, fruits, veggies, milk, cheese, eggs, boom, that's it. That's all they want. That's all they're going to buy. But while they're in the store, they're subject to impulse buying. All those eye-catching stuff that you really don't need, but you buy anyway because you convince yourself that you need, and it's there and it's at a good price, right? Right. So all these stores now, it's not out of an abundance of caution. I don't believe that. It's out of an abundance of business. It is affecting their business. One little mass shooter can affect their bottom line. I guarantee you that Walmart has seen the contraction in sales. They may not say it now, but they're certainly going to say it for the next quarter. So they're changing it now. So guess what? Come what? What's coming up? Black Friday. Black Friday is coming up, isn't it? Black Friday will be here before you know it. And they don't want their business to suffer from people not coming into the stores because they fear a mass shooting. No, if I were you, you would not catch me near any mall on Black Friday. I'm not going there. I'm not taking any big box store on or any mall. It's just not my thing. I'm not gonna do it. Why? Because time and time again, with gun control laws at a negative, it tells me that people are still, who are mentally unwell, and people who feel like that is their power. You can never explain that to me, because that's not how you feel. You're normal. You don't need a gun strapped to your hip, nor do you need a gun, you know, walking around in public to make you feel powerful. Even the police, my goodness, who have the license to carry a gun, they don't walk around strutting like a peacock on a fair. They're mindful of their power, you know, what authority they have, and they try to conduct it within the realm of the law. I don't understand what it is about these people. They're not all mentally unwell. Some of them are just feeling sidelined, and we perhaps need to have that frank conversation about it, about some members of our society who feel that they're sidelined by the economic empowerment movement that's going on. They feel as if they should be the ones in authority, not because they have a dream, not because they have a product to sell, or they have some sort of invention or innovation that will benefit the rest of us, but just because they feel that they should. So they're learning that life does not work that way anymore. That was 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago. In today's world, the currency of our economic time is that if you don't produce, you're not going to be part of this economic situation. That's the currency that we live in today. That is the economic reality. And so people who find themselves outside of this new reality are struggling to find their relevance. And what they do, the only way that they feel they can retain some control is through violence. It's just like the shooting that happened in Odessa, Texas on Saturday. This man was fired. You all keep firing people. Why are you all firing people indiscriminately? That is not to say if someone does something, you as an employer doesn't have the right to, but you need to let people go gently. This man was fired on Saturday, and he called the police, and the employer called the police on him. But before anyone could react, he was driving down the street erratically, and the state trooper saw him and pulled him over, and he shot the state trooper and then went on a shooting rampage to kill everybody else off because he got mad. Listen to me very carefully, brothers and sisters. I don't care if you are mad. Do you know how mad I get? I am mad that the society disparages against me based on my color, not based on my ability, not based on the content of my character, but the society dares to think they can disparage me against my color. Don't you think I should be mad about that? You never assessed my intelligence. You never looked at my contribution to the society. You just deemed to look at my color and to say that I don't have any value. I should be mad about that. But do you see me walking around trying to shoot anybody or argue with anybody about my value? If my value is perceived by you, that's your problem, not mine. I know what my value is, and as far as I'm concerned, while you're busy judging me for my value, I'm also judging you for your value. You see what I'm saying? So now we have this conundrum, if you will, of people who have a perceived value of themselves that the rest of us are looking at. Well, dude, what do you produce? You're sitting there looking over. Some of you are app developers, right? You make your own music. You have some innovative ways of delivering stuff, and you're doing okay, and you're happy. You're just grateful to that you live in a country where we have the freedom of expression to do that. Whereas there are others who feel that, well, I should own this. No, let me tell you all white nationalist folks out there, you don't have a right to nothing that is in this country. When you got here, you brought blacks with you. And when you got here, there were other people who were living here. Do you know what they call the rest of us? They call the rest of us non-Native Americans. Hello. Native Americans refer to the rest of us as non-Native Americans. Try that on for size. Okay? So I'm just highlighting to you the stupidity of the arguments that continue to prevail that have created this thing in our country where people feel that they have a right to. Some people feel that they have a right to. You look, can I just be honest with y'all? It doesn't work that way. If you're going to sit there and claim that you have a right, guess what? You have a responsibility that corresponds to that right. You know what your responsibility is? To keep the public safe. You're just as responsible for public safety. If you don't believe me, check this out. I'm driving down the freeway this morning. I'm on my way. I'm in my lane as thousands of others are. I know that I have to get to my destination by a certain time. I wake up early, and I am just like you. I have responsibilities. I have to get up and get my house in order before I leave. I have to make sure everyone who is in my house is equipped with what they need to leave on time. I get up and I work out. I have a responsibility to myself, right? So I take care of that. And I make sure I prepare myself. So I have a shower, I do all the stuff that I'm supposed to do to make sure I get to my destination on time. You know what I do to get to my destination on time? I leave early. So I give myself anticipating traffic. I give myself enough time to arrive at my destination. This person this morning, we're all on this four-lane freeway, four lanes in one direction, four lanes in the other direction. This person this morning decided that they had to get where they needed to within a certain time frame, and they were late. They gave not a hoot for public safety. They drove not in the extreme right, left lane. My friends, they drove on the shoulder, much to the dismay and the chagrin of the rest of us. Because we were like, they must be crazy. Everybody was slowed down, like they must have lost their royal marbles. They drove on the shoulder for more than 2 miles on the freeway, endangering everyone else. So the people who are in the extreme left lane, you have just this much shoulder. So in case, you know, you have to pull over or something happens, nobody could get over there because this car in a gray Ford Escape, like a newer one, was over there, like driving. And I'm like, how irresponsible is that? You don't give a hoot about public safety. You could, they just had construction on the road, so you could pick up anything in your tire kind of thing. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, that's a threat to public safety. That's someone who regards nothing about public safety. Do you see what I'm saying? And they just kept on driving until finally someone let them in. Now, we're talking about four lanes of highway. You had four lanes to do the right thing, put your indicator on, and traverse and navigate through until you get ahead of the body of traffic. Now, traffic is traffic. I get just as frustrated as you guys get about traffic. You think I like it? It slows you down. But what I do is I leave early and build myself 40 minutes. I tell myself that it's going to take me 45 to 50 minutes to navigate. So I give myself a 10-minute loop that I'm still going to arrive at my destination on time. Do you see what I'm saying? So this person I'm referring to in the gray Ford Escape this morning on 696 going west, right, between Mound and Woodward, they just had no cares, no clue. No clue whatsoever. Didn't care a hoot about public safety. All they cared about was their own agenda. Well, in a lot of ways, that typifies what is going on in our country. A lot of people are just selfish, self-centered, right? Just focused only on their own agenda. So they don't care about public safety. They want maximum effect. They want to see themselves on the news. They want to be trending on Twitter, right? Because that's a thing, right? Apparently. Sucks to be that, to be you and I who just think life should be normal, right? You're all looking at me like, mm-hmm. And they just want infamy. They want fame at any cost, even if it means taking someone's lives. That is the kind of violence. That violence is it, and the ramifications of it have eaten into our everyday lives. And it is now causing the rest of us to be nervous. Like yesterday, I went to Target. Trust me. Trust and believe that somebody somewhere crashed into something and everyone in the space went like, you could have heard a pin drop for like 5 seconds. Like everyone went like, do we duck or what do we do? Everyone was just trying to process, was that a normal sound or was that the sound of someone getting ready to cause a disturbance? That's what you call dissociative trauma. So you could tell for many of us, we were looking at each other like, I really shouldn't be here. This stuff that I need, I'm gonna order it online and have it shipped to my house. Do you see what I'm talking about? The unintended consequences, the stuff that someone else created such trauma, the stress of the trauma, the trauma, someone created such trauma that now the rest of us have to deal with it, right? We've become so self-centered and so selfish. So this is why we're focusing on violence. Where, you know, I'm talking about it because I want to bring to your attention how much it affects the rest of us. Like, I thought, honestly, I never thought I'd live to see the day when this kind of thing would be prevalent. Never. I thought that I would be talking about intimate partner violence, you know, the violence that takes place between two people in a relationship or domestic situations. I never, my friends, look at me. I never imagined that I would be talking about this. I never imagined that this could ever be part of our experience, that somebody actually walks into a crowd and takes out a gun and reloads like it's nothing and shoots at random people. That guy in Odessa, Texas, on Saturday, he shot at random people on the freeway. Unbelievable. So the rest of us are driving down the freeway and we're like, I'm not gonna make eye contact with anybody, and I'm definitely not gonna look, because you don't want people to suddenly just come and join up on you. And frankly, I wouldn't have given this a second thought. I would not have given this a second thought had this not happened. It's like, you know that saying, the sum of all your fears and your worst fears have come up on you? That's what we're talking about. So here are somebody asked me yesterday, what are the ramifications of violence? Well, here's what it is, right? We suffer what I call dissociative trauma. And let me tell you how that works. In 2018, I had some young women came into my shelter, and they were severely traumatized, right? They were victims of human trafficking, and they had been trafficked as children. Three of them had severe traumatic experiences. Three of them were taken as children. One was three. She was actually taken from a whole other country, right? Another one was taken when she was eight, and the third one, with the children traumatized situation, her father actually told her when she was eight to go stand on a street corner and give her body to grown men to make money for the family. She was 22 when I met her, right? And listening to their stories, I kid you not, listening to their stories traumatized me. I had to seek therapy myself. I had to go find my therapist and say, I need to talk. I kid you not. Because the way they repeated their stories, and this is why sometimes I have learned since then not to reenact people's stories, because it's reenacting the trauma. Unless telling so is being done in a space where it has to because of law enforcement, I have learned that sometimes people have memory blocks that have blocked out certain parts of their story so that they don't ever have to replay it or so on. And yet for some of us, retelling the story is not empowering. For most people, it's traumatic. And so when I became aware of their situations and how, if it, and I said to myself, if it's affecting me, how are they living with it? Right? And I had these young ladies in therapy and so on. Some had situations where it happened to them as older children, you know, 14 and 16. And as I listened to their stories and recognized how much they too were suffering from the effects of post-traumatic stress, I began to realize that I too was suffering from it. I needed as much self-care as they did. So even though I took them out, I packed them up in my car, made two trips sometimes, right? And packed them up in my SUV and took them to the mall, took them to Walmart, because Walmart was safe then. It was safe then to go to Walmart, right? And took them to places like Five Below, where everything is $5, and just say, hey, here's $20. You go knock yourself up, buy what you want. I kid you not. And I began to realize that there is something called dissociative trauma, where you become traumatized by listening to the story of someone's trauma. This is new for you. If this is new for you and it's ringing true for you, pay attention to it. Because you have to, when you're listening to your friend or your family member recount what happened to them that was a traumatic situation, I want you to sit down and listen and observe how you and your body is processing that information. Observe that, because that is going to give you an indication of what you need to do for self-care. Have you ever been around someone and you're a good listener, right? If you're one of those persons like me, you're always hearing people's stories, right? And they come and they tell you, but after they're done, you feel like you've just absorbed a burden, or you find yourself being irritable, erratic. Suddenly you find yourself hungry, you need something to eat, and you become agitated. That is dissociative trauma. if you find that you become tearful and you're crying, it's not just your compassion. You are what? You have become a part of it. You see what I'm saying? So watch yourself, right? Be careful. You need to go and engage in self-care. Anytime you come in contact with someone who has been exposed to trauma, be careful, right? Make sure that you go and you take care of yourself and do some self-care, right? Because these things, say it, these things happen, right? These things happen, and how do you survive it is entirely something that you have to determine your pace and your capacity to endure. Some of us are built to last. Some of us are built to withstand the traumas that people encounter. And yet for some of us, we can't even start. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, too much for me. Why don't you go talk to a therapist? I know someone you can go talk to. And it's okay to tell someone that. It's okay to say, have you ever thought of talking to someone? It is okay to say that. I'm here for you. But have you ever thought of talking to someone? That's how you gently nudge the conversation along the fact that perhaps this person requires some intervention that you can't. And you do it in such a way that they don't get offended or they don't completely shut down. Because sometimes when people have all those negative emotions bottled up, it's a powder keg of a disaster waiting to happen. They will go rockers. You have to understand we're humans and everyone has just so much that they can bear. And some people, it's too much. The kinds of stuff that we go through, the kinds of stuff that we endure, darling, it's way, way too much. Just way too much. Say way too much. Way too much, right? It is amazing to me how we sort of have this ability to absorb stuff, but at the same time, it's way too much sometimes. It's just say it's way too much, way too much. It's like that song that says, too much sauce, right? So if you ever find yourself in a state where you start wondering, is this too much? Is this too much? Just say gently to the person, have you ever thought of talking to someone, right? And what about you yourself? I find that I have certain self-care mechanisms that I invoke when I come in contact with traumatic situations and dissociative traumatic situations. I keep chocolate. I keep M&Ms. I kid you not. In my purse, I keep M&Ms. I'm just like, oh, let me go eat some of this right now because chocolate releases endorphins that make you happy. So now you know why women love to eat chocolate. Now you guys know, right? You're all nodding your heads like, oh, that's why. Yes, it makes us feel happy, right? And in fact, it's widely noted that this is given to trauma victims. So I keep chocolate. Even if you're a guy, maybe, you know, you think, oh, well, Harry, I'm a guy. I can just eat chocolate. Well, just keep it in your car. Nobody needs to know. And you just go to your car and eat it. Or if you're at home, you go buy brownies or something, right? So what I do is I keep chocolate, that's one. Number two, I go shopping. And by shopping, I mean just walking into and this is why violence affects me, because it is stopping me from part of my self-care, right? Yes, it's interrupting my self-care, because one of the ways that I perform self-care is what? Going into a big box store. Going into a big box store and walking around and looking. You'd be amazed. Like yesterday was quite a day. I had interacted with some traumatic situations for others. And I knew that I had to do something about it. Coupled with the fact that I'm on a fast where I'm eating one meal a day. I'm getting back to the stage where I eat one meal a day. I used to, and then I stopped last year. So I'm getting back to that stage. And I kid you not, I had a need to go to a big box store. So I went into Target. And just walking in there, I exhaled, I smiled, I started, you know, at the checkout camera, the self-checkout, they have a camera that says monitoring in progress. That's my best friend. Those cameras are my best friend. You should have seen me. I was posing and posing, and my daughter was like, Mom, get out of the way. People are waiting. And I'm like, they can wait a little bit. Just let me pose and enjoy the look, right? What I was doing was engaging in self-care. It looked a bit extreme. But I had to, right? It was required action, right? So those are some of the ways.